Let's call the meeting to order. Have a roll call, please.
Hugh Gibbons.
Here.
Bill Goggins.
Here.
David Hess.
Here.
Betsy Pringle.
Here.
Elsie Weber.
Here.
Rick Whitney.
Here.
Kathleen McMonigal.
Damn it, Kathleen.
I guess she'll be here later, maybe. We hope. Okay. First order of business is a reading and approval of the minutes.
Motion to dispense.
For the reading of the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. We'll dispense with the reading of the minutes. Does anybody have any? Let's take them one at a time. Start with the minutes of the 27th.
Yes, I have a correction.
Okay.
It says that no absent members, but I wasn't at the meeting.
Well, that's a very good observation.
But you were there in spirit,
Elsie.
Any other observations or corrections? Okay. Do we want to hear a motion to approve subject to the adding of members absent, name or Elsie Weber? Okay. So moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously to approve the minutes of the June 27th meeting, the July 10th special meeting.
I move we approve the minutes of the July 10th.
There was one thing I thought
meeting.
We might ought to do is add that Paul Meyer was interviewed by phone.
Okay. That's a good...
That's a good idea.
Good suggestion by telephone. Should I'm also curious, qualifications for public employment applicants, is that what we're called as public employment applicants?
No, I don't think so. Public employees don't really get paid.
I just didn't know that we were called public employment applicants. Anybody know what that means? Under the executive session, it says discussion of qualifications for public employment applicants.
Well, that's an acronym. It's P. And there's a peon, you know, peon.
Yes. Well.
Short timers.
Pardon?
I haven't heard of that.
There's a curveball for you, Nance.
Yeah.
Why don't we just
Why you say
that?
Discussion of
How about if we just say discussion of applicants?
Okay.
Applicants' qualifications.
Discussion of
qualifications for applicants.
Community council.
We'll just say discussion of qualifications for applicants.
Applicants' qualifications.
Okay.
It was not qualifications for applicants. It was qualifications of the applicants,
mm-hmm.
as Bill has noted.
That's when you have an English major in the group.
So noted.
And a major sergeant.
What?
What are you?
All right. Any other suggestions?
General?
Okay. Somebody want to make a motion, including the corrections?
Motion to approve. Motion to approve the minutes as amended.
Okay. Hold on now. We have two people speaking simultaneously, which makes it a hard time for the recording secretary. Hugh, you want to try this? Speak into the mic.
We approve the minutes for the July 10th meeting with the noted changes.
Noted changes being adding by telephone of the Paul Meyer application and discussion of qualifications of applicants or applicants' qualifications, right? Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay. The agenda for tonight includes council member reports, a work program review, requests from the audience, a presentation on the Granicus digital recording system, and then a hearing on miscellaneous zoning code amendments, followed by new business and administrative reports. That's the agenda. Do we have any council member reports or comments? Mr. Hess, do you want to?
I'm going to be stepping down from my position effective this meeting, and thank everybody for allowing me to be part of this. And I've enjoyed my 6 years here, and I think there's a heck of a lot of good candidates to fill my position at the current time, and future consideration, I may come back, but right now it's time for me to go.
My letter says something in addition to that, Dave. You want to elaborate?
Go ahead.
No.
Expose yourself, girl.
Actually, I would like to comment. Dave, when we talked, you said that you would at least stay through the hearings on the marina, right? Because we're not going to be able to replace you.
Yeah, I will stick around to try and get those.
We really need you to be in on that.
I'll try my best.
Okay. Thank you. And we'd like you to reconsider your...
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. And I guess along that lines, even though she's not here tonight, we welcome Kathleen McMonagall as our newest member of the council.
Has she been sworn in?
Yes, she was sworn in by the city clerk. So
she's good to go.
She's on. She's good to go, yeah.
Probably used to her life by now.
Yeah.
I have two minor things.
Okay.
One, I would like to urge all of you to get involved with the Houghton Neighborhood Parade float next year. Thank you. And
what happened?
We didn't win a prize.
No?
No. So, and we certainly could if we had enough talented
creative
people.
Talent.
Yeah, sure. So, and also I won't be here Monday for the public hearing. However, I've discussed this with Nancy, and I will listen to the tapes and be here for the deliberation on Wednesday.
Okay. I'd like to nominate Dave Hess to be the chairman of the Houghton Subcommittee for the
parade float.
I'm going to rule that motion out of order, but I take it in the spirit in which you have offered it. Do we have any other council comments or reports?
I will not be here next Monday for the meeting either. And I have a commitment that I've got to be at.
But you're committed to listening to the tapes and participating in the...
I will do that, yes.
Well, I wonder, wait a second now.
So when is your resignation effective?
Well, it was supposed to be tonight, but Rick talked me out of it, so... I'll make it, it's 24th, when I make it the 15th of June, or of August, excuse me.
15th of January?
August.
Okay.
Have a here?
I was just doing the math, yeah. As long as Kathleen's here and everybody else makes it, we'll be okay, yeah.
This is unavoidable.
I understand. Is yours unavoidable, Dave?
Yeah, at this point it is, yeah.
Okay. Anything else? No other reports or comments? Work program review? Anything on that, Nancy, you want to discuss with us?
Well, just a quick comment about the hearing next week. And the hearing examiner has issued a pre-hearing order, which is just describing the way that she sees the hearing taking place. And the first order will be, the first hearing will be the process, the zoning permit hearing is process 2B hearing. It's a joint hearing with you and the hearing examiner. And then after all the testimony is taken, that hearing will be closed and the community council will be able to leave. And then she will open the SEPA appeal hearing on the file. So once that is completed, then she will leave and the evening's meetings will be over. So the deliberation of the community council will be entirely on August
2nd,
Wednesday night. So it is important that if anyone has questions in advance, you know, you can get them to us and we'll be sure that they're made part of the record and so forth. But
who is the examiner?
Excuse me?
Watanabe.
Oh, yeah, Ann Watanabe.
Okay.
And so she just wanted to be clear about the way the two different hearings would be held. There's slightly different rules for a SEPA appeal hearing than the quasi-judicial hearing.
Nancy, is there any particular reason that we should or shouldn't be present for the SEPA hearing? Obviously not in official capacity, but just as a member of the audience, is that something that would matter whether we're here or not?
Off the top, I don't think so, but let me double check and I can let you know.
Okay. All right. So we're hoping that, even though we can't do any deliberation on the 31st, that we'll be able to come up with a written recommendation on the 2nd, depending upon how complex things are. Nancy's preparing to have the computer ready to go to type up a recommendation for us to to approve that
Stacey
night.
Stacey is, yes. Yeah.
Oh, Stacey is.
Doesn't know it yet, but.
Okay. So we'll do our best to try to get it done.
So, if possible, we could actually, you know, type on the computer. You could see a draft of your wording on the screen as we go. If that just is proving too difficult, then we'll have to come back another evening to approve the written recommendation.
Okay.
Or if it's relatively simple, the chair can sign later, which he has done in the past. So.
Okay. Very good.
Okay.
All right. At this point, we've got requests from the audience, which could be on any topic other than the hearing, which is on the miscellaneous zoning code amendment. So if you have anything you'd like to address us on any other topic, this is your opportunity. Please come talk to us. Okay. That was easy. Now at this point, we will have a brief presentation on the Granicus digital recording system.
And I do need to let you know that that actually will not be done tonight. It was on the agenda before we realized that Prince Cowan is on vacation. So he's not going to do that tonight. We also thought we wouldn't do it next Monday because of the hearing, so yeah, we'll postpone it until your regular August meeting if there are other items for the agenda. Right now there are no other items for that evening, but there may be something by then. So we'll keep you, we'll be in touch.
Well, if there are no other items on that agenda, I don't think we should have to come just to hear the request.
That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, okay, yeah. Gotcha.
That's the idea.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, if that's the only thing, we'll push it to September.
Okay.
Is that Granicus digital recording system in effect right now?
Yes, it is.
Okay. At this point, we move into the hearing on the miscellaneous zoning code amendments. Did you want to make a brief presentation highlighting what you've given us in writing, or what's the pleasure of the staff?
Let me give just a brief presentation, because this type of package is always somewhat fluid.
Yes.
So there's a couple variations that have come along that aren't mailed out to anybody yet.
Okay.
So I guess what I'd first like to do is tell you about a difference in the list of policy issues that you have starting on page 2 under section 4. And then maybe once we're done, talk about the policy issues to the extent you want to talk about them and have time to go through some of the others. I can tell you where there's some changes that staff has been talking about on those that we see as less policy, but still you should be aware of them.
Okay.
So issues that we've identified as policy, this has to do with the first one where we're talking about setbacks in the RM zones. And the whole idea here is to allow zero lot line multifamily development. As the draft amendment reads that you have in your packet, it would apply only to the RM zone. It would only be allowed if that were approved as part of a subdivision action. So a new subdivision comes in, asks for the ability to connect these buildings with property lines running through them. What the staff has talked about in recent days was if the city decides it's good for the RM zone, why wouldn't it be just as good for other zones that allow multifamily development, which would include the PR zone and several of the planned areas. And the planned areas that we would look at that lie in Houghton would be the planned area 2 and 3A and B. We would not extend this to planned area 15, even though it allows multifamily, because that's kind of its own unique zone. there's other zones like CBD, obviously not in Houghton, that also allow multifamily, but we wouldn't be looking at making this change there either. But just to let you know that to give consideration to not only the RM zone, but to other kind of similar zones for that amendment.
Okay.
Can we ask questions at the right this minute, or is that all right?
Well, let's let Ben. He's just going to give us a little bit of, you know, the overview of the
everything, and then we go back.
And then
not going to go through detail in the
He's not going to great
first blush.
Let's just get a quick overview, and then I'd say we just kind of go through it in order. And anybody's got an issue, so otherwise we could be jumping around so haphazardly. It might be more efficient. Okay.
And
go ahead, Michael.
And then the only other one that jumps out to mind has to do with home occupations, and we might want to wait till we get there, but I know Nancy's been working on some amendments. We had quite a bit of interest on that amendment or set of amendments from the Planning Commission, and which basically meant staff needed to go back and kind of take another look at some of those elements. So maybe when we get to that point, she can describe to you kind of where we might be headed on that.
Okay.
So I think with that, I'll just stop, and then if you want to start going through the policy issues or...
Well, let's have our public testimony, and then we can go through from there. Does that sound fair? So, any of our audience care to make any comments on the proposed zoning code amendments? With that, I guess it's time to open and close the hearing in one fell swoop. Well, not really, but... As far as the public portion, now we're going to be just going through it. What I'd like to suggest, just to keep it on track, is that we literally just go through in order the different codes, the different chapters. I guess this would what I would suggest is we start with attachment two, and then I don't know about you guys, I went through and just kind of noted a few things that I had questions on, and that would be just. Go through it pretty rapidly, hopefully. Does that work? Just follow it in the order of the
Except
of the chapters?
I didn't make my notes on attachment two, but I'll try to keep
it. Okay. Well, the first one is the definitions. Did anybody have any issues in the definitions?
I have one change to note there.
What's that, Michael?
That we are suggesting that the final definition change having to do with rear property line, that amendment go away. We started talking about that among staff and saw that it was somewhat confusing in the first place, but also it started leading to undesirable consequences. So we don't propose that amendment go forward.
Okay, so 5, 10, 7, 20?
Right.
Okay.
So it'll just read the way it stands right now then?
Right.
Okay. All right. I'm curious... On bay window, what was the genesis of going from a 75% to 50% on?
The point there is that the smaller bay windows, and I don't know just where that break is, but the smaller they get, the harder it is to meet the 75% glazing requirement because of the framing involved in the window.
Oh.
So it's just kind of a practical consideration.
Okay. All right, so that's the chapter on definitions, and then we go to, and I'm going to skip over anything that's asterisk since it doesn't apply to Houghton. I don't see anything in the RS zones that look particularly, anybody see any chapter 15 concerns? Then RM zones was one that you specifically said was an area of contention. So let's, anybody have any specific questions on the RM zones?
I do.
Okay.
Let's see, on the first one, allowed detached dwelling units in RM 3624 and 18 to have combined side yards of 10 feet. That's reducing it from the 15, right?
Right. Right now. Right.
So, but is there anything that precludes a home, someone from buying two or three 2,000 foot lots, let's say, in one of these zones, and building a huge house, and they're 5 feet away from their neighbors?
Not under this amendment.
Yeah. So I'm certainly not in favor of reducing setbacks. in any way, shape, or form. That's
mm-hmm.
I think that's part of what we were trying to do when we at the FARs, so I think it just makes sense that that doesn't apply to
me. Yeah.
Any feedback along that lines from the Planning Commission?
Their feedback, no, we didn't discuss that one specifically, so no.
So I guess we're raising a concern in that area.
Then. Yeah. I don't know enough about zero lot line developments, but I'm not keen on them at this point. And then on 2010-020, allowing the increased height for a multifamily development that adjoins a school that's been granted a height increase, that just feels like incremental creeping height increases to me. And I know when we were talking about giving height increases to schools, it was because they had to have them because of their electronic equipment that was in the ceilings, and there was all these special reasons why they were granted a height, you know, greater height, and then to say, oh, and now the building next to them can also have a higher height, it just seems like to use the proverbial domino effect, but you know, then it sounds like special privileges to me for one class of multifamily that's not allowed by another class of, and I don't see any reason.
Well, mostly multifamily has a height of 30 feet, and the only time it doesn't is when it's next to a low density zone, or like single family,
right,
or schools, which is in a low density zone.
Right.
So in this case, what we were thinking is if the only low-density zone that they're adjoining is one that has a school that's 30 feet or more, then it doesn't so much allow kind of the zoning creep or the domino thing, even though it allows the multifamily to go to 30, because everything beyond that's going to be 30 anyway, because it's going to be non-low-density uses beyond.
What's the radius of that, though? Of
100 feet.
Just 100 feet from the school?
From the property line. So it would be from the school property line 100 feet into the multifamily.
Well, what does that do to the people's property behind there that you let that go to 30 feet?
That's what my point is.
Well, it wouldn't be single family behind there because there's or adjoining the multifamily, because that's another low density zone, which would have its own requirement to push it back down to 25. So it would have to be between a school and some other non-low density zone. So maybe it's surrounded by multifamily or office. But if there's another one there that overlaps and that is going to rule, it's going to push it back down to 25.
Can you think of an example of where that would be?
Yeah, if I had a map in front of me, I'm sure I could.
I'm thinking across the street from Lakeview, just across 68, there's houses on the corner there, and since that school's got exemptions, can't those people go up to 30 feet? Or the condos on the other side of the railroad tracks.
Well, adjoining isn't across the street, but
it has to be adjoining.
Has to be.
Okay.
Adjoining.
Can you, Michael, suggest any places in Houghton that this would be applicable?
There are places, at least in theory, it could be applicable because a lot of zones allow school uses.
Mm-hmm.
So even if there's not a school on a property now, one could be built. I mean, you have the best school. You have the is it the little school?
The Seventh
Day Adventist.
What's that?
The Seventh Day Adventist School.
But it's across the street, isn't it? Didn't you say it had to be adjoining?
Oh, we were just listing school.
Right.
No, what I'm saying, can you think of a situation where you've got a school adjacent to a low density zone that where this could actually apply in Houghton?
Where it adjoins a multifamily zone?
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to look at a map.
Can you guys think of any? I can't.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to clarify is, okay, let's say you've got a, let's pretend like it's Lakeview School, mm-hmm. whatever height Lakeview is right now.
And I think it's 30-something.
Okay, and then, so let's pretend like there was a application for a multifamily next to that, and then you say there was another so let's say there's another multifamily which could have gone to 30, you're saying? Because multifamilies can go to 30 unless they adjoin
a low density zone.
Okay. And you're saying the school is a low-density zone.
Right. And, you know, the dominant use in low-density zones is single-family, which has a
right.
limit of 25 feet.
In Houghton, isn't it 25 feet anyway?
Well, that's what I mean. The predominant height limit throughout single-family zoning is 25 feet because the dominant use is detached. It's a low-density mm-hmm. use in the low-density zone. So once in a while you get this anomaly of a school that's allowed to go taller for whatever those reasons are. So we're just suggesting if its abutting neighbor is multifamily, should that multifamily have to go back down to 25? And if it's next to an office, then we're back to 30. You know, so you can go 25 single family, school up to 30 plus, down multifamily 25, and then up 30.
See, it gives a nice opposite. Modulation
oh, like
height instead of just this flat. I don't know. That's a little trickier than I was thinking, you know. I don't know. I guess it's worth, I don't know.
The Planning Commission had different questions than that. I mean, they didn't say this is a great idea, let's move ahead with it. They also said, well, let's keep it on the list and look at it. They had concerns about what if you get a taller multifamily building and it's right next to the school play yard?
Yeah.
Will that have a kind of a bulk and mass impact? Or if it's next to one of the covered play areas but not walled in, are the people up in upper floors going to be annoyed by ricocheting, you know, noise?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a reason why the schools are located in single-family zones, because I think you kind of want that sort of feeling, right? You know, you want that kind of, you know, and so then to kind of put them in the middle of all these high-rises is kind of not the same.
I just find myself wondering why we, if there aren't any situations in Houghton that this would apply to, let's not devote a whole lot of time to it. Is what
because I'm it, because it could. I mean, it could apply to
a future date.
Yeah, a future
date. Oh, just an upzoning.
There's a lot of land there.
Yeah, I mean, if they, yeah, I mean, if some other, somebody builds a school or the, I don't know. Just, it could.
Yeah,
it could.
Okay. Can't see us increasing the density, but.
Ah.
You never know.
You're thinking we'll start going to be around in a while.
Okay.
I want to go back. I have a question about the detached, attached, and stacked dwelling units. Page 2, paragraph 20.10.020. Definition is kind of confusing. The says number 6, if approved by the city as part of subdivision, the side yard may be reduced to 0 feet if the side of the dwelling unit is attached to a dwelling unit on an adjoining lot. Okay, so you have two units adjoining lots. Okay, that's simple. If one side of the dwelling unit is so attached and the opposite side is not, that side is not attached. The side that is not attached must provide a minimum side yard of 5 feet. So how could one side be attached and the other not attached?
Yeah,
it could be the end of a row. You could have like a row of four townhouses.
Oh, so you
could
have
separate
units.
Are going to be attached.
Okay. It says one side of a dwelling unit.
Right. So, like, if unit A and B are attached, you know, each of them is only going to have one side that's attached.
Mm-hmm.
Their common side. And the others have to maintain some setback.
Okay.
Okay. Should we move forward? Next. Chapter that is of concern to us is, well, 60 planned areas, but there wasn't anything there that was any issue, I don't think. The big one is, the next big one is chapter 90, drainage basins. That's got a lot going. Who's got questions on that?
On the drainage basin?
Mm-hmm. Yep, chapter 90. Mm. This gets into the reasonable use provisions, which is, you know, just as a start on that, I am curious, has this, that what we're being, because this is all new language, has this been used or applied successfully elsewhere? Or are we starting from scratch and coming up with our own language on this?
I'm not sure, really sure, how much has been borrowed from elsewhere. That this has been pretty much the city attorney's challenge is to write this up, so that's where this has come from. Staff has had a number of questions about it, and so we've been going through, and though haven't come up with any fundamental changes to what the attorney has proposed.
Why is the city attorney writing code language about drainage basins?
Because it's about reasonable use, which is a very tricky area, and the city council has reviewed a couple of these requests and has basically directed staff and with the city attorney to rewrite the section.
Bill, it's I would think that it is probably to position the city to avoid lawsuits on takings issues.
Right. Mm. I mean, that's basically what reasonable use is about.
Right.
Not affect the takings.
And that would, like, then you would want the city attorney involved in it. You know.
But that is a big section, and that's one that we call out on the policy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this seems like a big, big issue.
And we've come up with, like I say, a number of wording changes, but I can't think of anything really substantive compared to what the city attorney has come up with. Though I also know there's going to be more work done on this by the city attorney.
I was, you know, one of the things that I look at is the 10% or 3,000 square feet being the minimum threshold. Is there some magic to that? Do you have any idea where that came from? Is there some court case that...
I doubt there's any court case that speaks specifically to that.
You know, I know that I don't know enough that it concerns me. All I know is that when you're involved with construction, that the actual footprint of the structure is oftentimes, you know, not representative of what you need to disturb,
right,
in order to get in your utilities. And, you know, there's so much involved, much more than I know how to understand myself. But just, it concerns me if we've got an attorney that's drafting this that doesn't, unless she's gotten some, if it's come from court cases or she's gotten some input from the construction industry. I'm not trying to promote it one way or the other, but just that if you're trying to come up with reasonable clauses, somebody's really thought that through. That's all.
Well, one of the other towns had that one, I noticed, on the matrix. So maybe that's where it came from.
Bellevue. Yeah. Yeah, it does look like it came from Bellevue.
It sure does. It reads off.
I kind of liked it.
Yes.
No,
I just knocked it off. Sorry.
Okay. Does anybody have any specific questions or concerns or suggestions related to this whole issue of reasonable use and the all the drainage basin issues?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming that it's all fits in with our critical areas,
right,
regs, and Patrice has looked at this or will, and all that. So.
And the final language is going to come back to us to look at, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'll send David a copy.
Well,
you can email it.
I guess at this point, maybe we just say, "Hey, we recognize that it's something we need to do, but we're going to withhold judgment on it until we know a little more." And it sounds like it's being driven by the city attorney anyway. So, we'll reserve judgment. We don't see anything that, at first blush, looks terrible. Does it? Is that a fair comment?
What looks terrible about it?
I said that we don't see anything.
Oh, we don't see anything.
Yeah. No, we're not seeing. At first blush, we don't see anything that just jumps out and says, "Oh my God, that doesn't make sense," or "That's not something we could agree to."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, and let's move on. Next chapter is chapter 105, parking and access. That wasn't identified as a contentious provision.
Mm-mm.
Looks fine to me. And then Chapter 110, required public improvements. Same. Nothing real contentious there. Let me know if I'm going too fast.
Let me catch up.
Then we go to the miscellaneous standards, 115.
I have one question.
Okay.
115.60. 281 is vents and chimneys or detached, attached, or stacked dwelling units may exceed the maximum height limit. By how much?
We actually have a change to that.
Hey, pardon?
We actually have a change to that wording.
Okay.
That this amendment kind of overshot what it was intended to do. What it was intended to do was just make clear that skylights could exceed the roof on multifamily building. So instead of adding attached and stacked to this item A, we would just leave that as is, detached dwelling units, and leave all that wording under A the way it is. But then under B, other structures, we would add wording to say, for attached or stacked dwelling units, skylights may exceed the height limit by a maximum of 6 inches, just the way it is for detached structures.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on the miscellaneous provisions?
Yeah.
Anything else?
115.142 to remove the 15-foot height limit for transit and shelters and centers. I can see that for our business areas, Juanita, Total Lake, downtown Kirkland. But this is removing it from all zones, and I feel that we should have something still as a height limit for our RS zones. Just a thought.
That's a good one.
Adding leaf blowers to noise regulations. Hear, hear. Thank you.
We've actually jumped ahead a little bit. Did you have any questions on the home occupations? Or
did we skip occupations?
That would be in 115.65.
Well, we're in the 115 in general chapter, so anything within 115 game.
And
I was definitely planning on asking about that. I'm curious on the 115.59 historic grades, which you pointed out as something. You know, that one, to me, I wonder how feasible, reliable, and subject to interpretation this calculation of historic grades is. Is this something that could be abused?
I think it's calculable. I think the dilemma is one that the Planning Commission brought up, which is, so people just get to pick and choose. I mean, those who can find an older survey, they get to, you know, either hide it from the city or bring it to the city. Mm-hmm. And we had a discussion about this at a staff meeting, and there is that dilemma, but I think there's also reason for some amendment along this line, because if, let's say you build a house, and part of that, and it's on land that hasn't been developed before, so that's real easy to figure out what the ABE is, and you choose to dig down on that property, maybe to put a garage or daylight basement or something, so your ABE is actually up above that bottom finished floor, and you can measure up from there. And a few years down the road, you decide to put on an addition. Well, now where do you measure that ABE from? Is it this new existing grade, which is the bottom of the floor? That doesn't seem quite fair. So that's kind of the dilemma. That's the issue we're trying to get at, without then giving somebody a loophole to build something that's going to shock people and take advantage of.
What do other cities do?
I don't know how they interpret that sort of thing. There's different cities measure grade differently, and some measure from finished grade, so it kind of doesn't matter in that case what was there before, so however it ends up.
Why don't we do that?
I think the city has chosen not to do that because finished grade tends to encourage building up the topography and then going up from that. Existing grade tends to encourage digging down, right, because all that's kind of free height that you're getting. And I think it's just been seen as more predictable what could happen on a piece of property that's in front of you or surrounding you. Mm-hmm. Some do whichever is worse. But in those cases...
Yeah, lower, I was going to say, what about lower of?
Yeah. Some, but the ones who say existing, I'm not sure how they address that.
Well, this one really bothers me. Because you don't know what you're going to find out there in some file.
Yeah.
So there may be better ways of drafting this where it can really get at those instances that we think it's fair, you know, provided, again, that they have the original survey, but without opening up to unintended consequences.
You know, I hate to be skeptical, Michael, but it seems to me it wouldn't be that difficult to kind of produce something. You're talking about a lot of money at stake here, a lot of potential impact on value. You know, there are people out here who are out in this world that aren't that ethical, that I wouldn't put it past them to produce something that, you know, how are you going to
risk their surveyor's license over that?
Well, aren't you talking about finding some survey that was done 20, 30 years ago that may not even be around anymore?
Yeah, but I mean, but the survey would be around. It'd be recorded. That's the only way they could find it.
Yeah?
It would be recorded, right?
Right.
Has to be recorded,
right?
Because you have unrecorded. So if it's not a recorded survey, it wouldn't count,
right?
Okay.
And maybe that should be clear. Maybe that should be one of the changes.
Yeah, I think I thought maybe somebody could just come up with great grandmother's piece of paper that said.
I didn't read that in there. To me, I saw a lot of potential for this to be abused. So if you're saying it has to be a recorded survey, that should eliminate a lot of that potential abuse.
What if you put an age on the survey? You can't go back further than 1800 or something.
How far do they go back? We can look at that and see if there's something there. But I don't think it's drafted perfectly right now, by any means.
Yeah, I would really look at what some of the consequences might be that are unintended.
Yeah.
Because you could open up a whole can of worms, and then it becomes unpredictable for anybody who has property. And you like things to be predictable.
Yeah, and if you just dig a basement, but then that allows the next guy that comes to build, that makes his allowable, that gives him more building height?
Is that because he'd be using the same ABE as the first guy. Unless if this change is made, I mean, that's the intent of this, is to so that everybody is starting out with the same platform.
Like the land is here, and you get to go up. But there's all this. But they're not, so they're not going to count that basement in when the new house.
No, anything dug down. You know, if you're building a new house, you start with the ground, and if you dig down below it, we ignore that for height. It's everything measured above that existing ground level.
Okay.
So the concern is, under that law, is that if you do dig down and somebody new comes in, do they have to measure now if they want to rebuild? You know, do they have to start at that basement floor level?
Yes, and that'll lower all the... Eventually, we'll
over
just...
Time.
All over time. Yeah. Just kidding.
20 years from now.
Right.
Okay. So we have concerns on the use of historic grades provision.
Yeah, and this is one of the amendments that would codify an interpretation. So basically, operationally, it's not that old of an interpretation, so this doesn't go way back. Is it 05?
04.
So a couple years, and I don't know how often it's been used. It's been used on Park Place, I think, one development. And
mm-hmm. Okay. Do we have any concerns about home occupations, the changes in that area?
I think it's awfully loose. It seems taken out all of the, like, car repair, and I can see a truck thing not being able to fit in your house. But people could still do their car repairs in garages. I just would like to see it a little more substance to what the rules are. I realize that it's done. You're trying to make it less.
No, seems like it's tightening it up.
The whole purpose of going through the code amendments was to make the code easier to enforce, actually. And when we looked at the list of prohibited businesses, which I think you're talking about, and they're deleted in this version, the idea that we heard from council at an early meeting was, let's try to regulate by standards rather than listing businesses. So if there's no outside activity permitted, that would prohibit, in essence, car repair if it were to be in someone's driveway, for example, a commercial car repair.
But it would still be all right in their garage.
If they can meet the other standards.
They would have to meet
the noise and odor and
hazardous storage, hazardous material storage.
So there's not three strikes that I could find in the zoning code. Are you planning on adding an amendment or a zoning?
We need to talk to the city attorney to see if we can. I'm not sure we can do that. That was a suggestion of the Planning Commission as well, to do this without very much process at all. If they're like, you find the third violation or something, you yank the license and they're done. Not sure we can.
In the business license ordinance, which is a separate ordinance, there is a provision for revoking licenses.
I read all of that. But I saw the three strikes and you're out type thing, and I just wondered if that was going to be part of it. But that's just a suggestion.
Just passing on the commission's comments.
Okay.
As it stands now, are you mostly enforcing this by, if somebody complains, then you go basically and try
almost
to...
Almost entirely, yeah. We're reactive.
Are you finding a lot of problems with home-based businesses?
There are several cases that are chronic, so to speak, that are difficult to... Home occupations are difficult to deal with because the code enforcement officers can't be there to observe. So, even with this new version, it's not perfect. I mean, there's really nothing that the city can do with camping out and watching, how a business is run. How many employees are coming? How many customers? Are they exceeding the limits of this or that? It is very difficult to enforce, and I'm not sure there's a good answer to that, but we're trying to close some of the areas that have been difficult, just make it a little bit more clear, and respond to some of the concerns that we've heard.
Is it mostly like traffic and parking issues that you get complaints about?
There are ongoing number of employees has been an issue. Documenting how many there actually are, how many customers are actually coming, are they friends coming to the house, or are they customers?
Right.
That kind of thing.
But why do people care unless it's the traffic and parking that's the problem?
It's just the extra activity that they're perceiving, and they think it's because it's a home occupation.
Okay.
And then also on the other side, recognizing that more and more people are wanting to work out of their homes and that it's a good
and are able
economic
cuts down on traffic.
Well, I know
emissions.
There are many. We have think the number was 1,000 home occupations in the city. So there are a small minority are violations.
Yeah.
So we don't want to close the door by any means. We just want to be sure that the impacts are understood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I would wonder is maybe part of it that in some cases the neighbors are just being very unreasonable in their what their tolerance is of a little bit more activity coming and going, you know.
I would have to agree with that statement.
Yeah. I know my yoga teacher had to quit teaching out of her home because neighbor. I know. How quiet is a yoga class? I mean, you don't even talk.
Yeah, I would try to sigh. You know, I don't want to see our code become overly restrictive because of intolerant people. And
yeah.
So I.
True. I know it's sort of it is a balance. We want to recognize, you know, both sides of it.
Yeah,
in my neighborhood, one of the neighbors got mad at somebody, and that's all he's done. Yeah, just every time he turns around, he's calling in and complaining about the guy or something.
Yeah.
Buildings, cars,
yeah, sidetracked,
everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes the enforcement cases are really about other issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so we're we are open to the changes, I guess is that a fair statement, but let's not go overboard and being unreasonable and want to see the final draft before we say yay or no to it.
Okay, if there are any, you know, issues that you see that are really jumping out at you, that'd be good to know. I guess you won't see this again before
final.
You know,
end.
If nobody has anything in mind, Hugh just made a side comment to me that you've never, until you've actually lived right next door to somebody with a home occupation, you don't really understand or can't appreciate the. And so I would encourage all of us, even if we don't think of it right now, that, you know, maybe you talk to people you know who have a home occupation going on next to them and try to, if there's some, or people who have the home occupations on the other side of it, if you know somebody that's got one. Take a minute and go over with them and just say, do you see anything about this that's particularly unreasonable? And I suppose we could give you that kind of input, even though it's not as a council.
Yeah, you could.
You'd be open to it?
Right, written and we'll.
Okay.
Give it.
So let's proceed that way on this. Let's each try to make an effort to. This does concern me, this whole area that, you know, I don't know because I don't have it and don't live next to one. So.
Not that you know of.
Yeah. Well, and if I don't, who cares?
Right.
You know, that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
Just one point on that. So we would need anything like that prior to August 10th.
Okay, so if we.
Has a hearing on August 10th.
All right, so if we have any specific suggestions individually, let's email them to Michael or Nancy or.
To Michael.
Okay. Email them to Michael before the Planning Commission meeting on the 10th.
Okay.
Both of them.
Anything else in the miscellaneous provisions, Chapter 115? That
I just clarify the calculating lot coverage. What I'm taking away from this is that you're tightening this up, so perhaps there will be less impervious surface. Is that what you're doing here?
That's true, and it's we figured out this week it could be done more simply than what you have in front of you, but that section has subparagraphs 1 through 6. We really figure we can achieve what we want just with 1 and 2.
Okay.
And 3 through 6 are just different ways of trying to say the same thing. But basically, yes, it would incrementally reduce overall lot coverage.
Good. Okay. On the required, something else on required yards. I think that 200 square feet structures are pretty big. Going from 120 square feet for a shed, right? Is that basically what this
right.
is?
Right.
Storage shed to 200 feet storage shed. That's pretty big.
That's less than 5 by 5 feet.
Well, it
no, it's
no, 10 by 20.
It's a 10 by 20.
You don't have to be the same.
5 by 5 is 25 square feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so this is 200 square feet. That's
10 by 20.
How'd you come up with that?
The it's based on a building code change that when the city went to the new international building code, the threshold for accessory structures not requiring permits, building permits, went from 120 to 200. Now, the zoning code doesn't have to be the same as the building code, but that was the idea, was to get them the same.
So. I mean, I have a storage shed in my backyard, which we sometimes trot out for the 4th of July parade. You've probably seen that. But it's 10 by 12. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the 120. And it's one of those things that if you see them, we got it up there at Garden Solutions on Woodinville Road, and you can have a loft in there. You could live in there. I mean, it's 10 by 12, but it's a good space. You know, it's tall, it's got, you put a sleeping loft, I mean, so 200 square feet is a fairly big shed.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just think that's awfully big.
Make room for the chickens.
Make room for the chickens. You could put the horses in there. Just my 2 cents. Big shed. I think it's too big.
Any other...
Is that the required yards? It was, wasn't it?
Well, that was within the
115.
Yep.
I have something, but this is paperwork.
Sorry.
Underneath M.
Uh huh.
115-115. If you read that over, Michael, and then where I find, are we trying to say that you can have more than one shed in somebody's front yard?
Oh, where it says except a required front yard? No, the deal is you can't have it in a front yard.
Could you maybe reword that a little bit while you're fixing the zoning code? Thank you.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That
you could see it. You could interpret
that. Yeah,
that
you could interpret that as, yeah. You can have at least two. You can have two in the front.
No, you haven't said anything about trees.
Anything else under Chapter 115, miscellaneous? Next thing would be Chapter 130, rezones. That wasn't considered to be a particularly...
Well, it's not only because a project rezone, it is almost past history. We haven't had a project rezone in a long time. And basically, it's where you approve a rezone based on a specific development proposal, concomitant zoning agreement type thing. Those used to be pretty popular in Kirkland. But since with growth management and the requirement that comprehensive plan and zoning match or are consistent... most of the rezones now are done as part of that whole process, so we don't really get people coming in and say, would you approve a rezone if I promised to build this? But still, there might be the opportunity for one. It's still possible to do it on the books. And we just thought that, you know, if one ever were to come through, this is a little bit of wiggle room. It's not excessive. Just allows a little flexibility on a modification.
As long as you're not going over the height of the zone. So.
Well, it does provide for going over the height, doesn't it?
No.
It doesn't allow going over the maximum allowable height of the zone. So
it's like if you had approved something that was under the height for the zone originally.
Right.
And then you come back.
Oh,
you
I
can
see.
Go up,
got
but
it.
You can't go up above.
Or you can't go above.
Can't go
right.
above.
Or if the approval were specific on a certain building, you're leaving it at this height, then you can't do anything to change that either.
Okay.
I want to go back one when we finish with that section.
Go ahead.
The driveway section, driveways and parking areas, page 25.
Chapter.
Chapter 115. There's an exception that's been added. It says, planning official may approve a modification to the driveway and or setback requirements in KZC if, and it's C, a solid screening fence is provided adjacent to the portion of the driveway and or parking area for which setback modification is requested. So what that's saying to me is there's a 5-foot side yard setback for a driveway, and if that new driveway owner, property owner, puts up a solid screening fence, he could put it 4 feet or 3 feet or 2 feet, depending on the planning official.
That's what that says.
Why would you want to do that?
The basis for the setback is just to give a little relief to the adjoining property owner,
mm-hmm.
and often that might be landscaped, or even if it's not, it's at least some physical separation from the neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought was that a solid fence can achieve the separation just as that distance can.
What is the assurance that that solid fence is going to remain there forever?
You're basically giving that property owner the right to build, you know, inside the setback, and then the property owner who's being impacted next door has no say in it. The planning official is going to override the zoning code because he's putting in a solid fence. I don't agree with that at all.
And solid fences in single families have to be, they can only be, what, 3 feet, 4 feet, 3 feet?
No.
In the front yard, they can go to six.
6 feet?
Back from the...
Wow, so you could have a 6-foot fence all of a sudden up in...
You can have that regardless.
Yeah.
I see this goes in the face of a lot of the stuff that we see in the other regulations. This, I don't see any reason for having this in here. This is outrageous.
Outrageous.
I am outraged.
Because it's creating more impervious surface, or it's become it's encroaching into the setback.
You're taking the neighbor's house next door, and you're taking away that setback that's providing a buffer from him and the next property, the next house, and you're saying he could do that, but because the planning official says it's okay to put up a solid screening fence.
So
that's taking away the property rights of the.
So you have the car noise and exhaust closer to your property line just because he put up a fence, but that isn't going to mitigate any of that.
Right. And
I hear you.
Also, it's the guy who wants to put the driveway in closer is getting to build a bigger house or do something else on his property they shouldn't be allowed to do because he's supposed to have a 5-foot setback, and you're saying the 5-foot setback goes away.
It wouldn't affect the structure in any way, would it, Michael?
No.
But if moving the driveway over allows you to move into the setback, that'll allow you to move the house over so you have a bigger house.
I see what you're saying. You could shift the house as long as it still meets setbacks.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Your new reduced setback of 3 feet. Your new setback of 0.
Well, the house setback doesn't get reduced, but I mean the required yard doesn't get reduced.
The
physical positioning of the house could come closer. That's what you're saying, I think.
No, I'm saying that if you say the driveway doesn't have to be 5 feet away from the property line, mm-hmm. and that allows him to build a bigger house because now he can move the driveway over, so everything shifts, and you know he has a bigger house. If he wanted to build a bigger house, he could.
Yeah, but still can't violate the required yards of that house. I think we're saying the same thing.
But you're violating the side yard setback of 5 feet.
Not for the building.
Not for the structure.
Well, no, the building will, no, but the driveway, yeah.
Yeah.
I presume your intent, or the thought was that the increased impact from having the driveway 5 feet closer, up to 5 feet closer, would be more than offset by having the fence. Is that
right.
The thought?
That's dangerous territory because then you'll see all these developers wanting to put in these solid fences and getting mm-hmm. a bigger house on the lot because now they're squeezing the driveway over.
Yeah, and I think there is a corresponding provision in the zoning code where that setback, regardless of what this says, the driveway setback can be modified and it can shift, and basically whenever it is allowed, one of the conditions is, well, you're going to have to put up a fence here. So it's kind of the flip side of that. It's having it appear in both places. But this is a little different in that it makes the provision of the fence justification for the modification, which is different from the other provision.
Well, I certainly don't like anything that encourages more fences in Kirkland.
Michael, if I understand you correctly, this can be done anyway? Is that what you said?
You can get to that. If you can meet the criteria for modification of the 5-foot buffer, which is a different provision than this one, then you can be allowed to shift your driveway over closer to the property line. And then in response to that, a typical condition is you have to do something, put up a fence, or better screening or something.
So what is that provision? How would you allow that?
It's in 150.
While they're looking for that, be thinking if there's anything else in any of the other chapters that you have any questions or concerns on.
We are going to go back to zero lot line, aren't we?
Where was that, Elsie?
At the very beginning, in the four important things that we're holding. The four things that will affect our area at the beginning.
I thought we discussed that, didn't we? That was the purpose of going through it, through this, you know, methodically.
And you said, don't say anything until we're all done. So.
Oh, well, no, I said until we get into our discussion of the chapter, so you didn't get your point made, it didn't come up. Misunderstanding, I apologize, but you can certainly make that point.
Okay, I'll wait until we're done.
Okay, no, my intent was to try to begin and at one point and work through it methodically rather than jump around. And so is that anybody else have any other points that they want to discuss while staff's looking for that provision in the code?
Are we still going down in order here?
Yeah, we're trying to follow the order, so other than your exception on the zero lot lines.
This is kind of a funny one.
What was that, Hugh?
155, 100.
The exact same one?
Right. Oh, yeah.
This proof of jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
If they come down to Houghton and do it in Houghton.
Mm-hmm.
Should the application effective within this proof of jurisdiction?
What section, so we don't get lost here?
Did you get to the point?
Yeah, it's the section we are talking about. The if you're reading paragraph 3 on page 25 of the report that led into this whole discussion.
Right.
It says the planning official may approve a modification to the driveway and/or setback requirements if, and then the first two, A and sub B, apply.
So that is what has in the past allowed people to.
Right. Yeah. So it's based on topography.
Right. Those are physical, but the third one is an open door. That new one you're adding there, C, is an open.
Yeah, well, it is an addition. That's true. It's
yeah, I'm not following you. It says pre-existing improvements.
Right. So right now, under either A or B, you could do this modification. You could shift. You could be allowed to shift the driveway closer to the property line. And A and B speak to existing topography or.
Yeah.
Location for existing improvements or vegetation.
Right.
So, yes, C and D then go beyond.
It's not something that would have qualified in the past. You're adding something,
right.
A new.
Right. This would have been a condition if you met A and B.
Yeah, but I thought it made a comment that there's some other way that they could have done the same thing before.
There was, but.
Okay.
Well, the other way is if they meet A and B,
right.
A or B,
right,
then
right.
We tell them usually put in a fence to block your neighbor. And so
do we want to say that we're not so keen about C?
I'm totally against C.
Phil's totally against C.
I think you probably picked up on that.
I'm hearing you say you're totally against C.
I'd be concerned about it because what's the assurance that whatever it is, that you think is going to mitigate the impact, that it's going to be there forever. Fences come and go. So.
Well, you're giving that property owner a license to build a bigger property,
yeah.
Bigger house than he would have been allowed, and he's infringing on a 5-yard setback that's, you know, given a buffer from the next house.
So we disagree with that point, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so we... I think we're unanimous on that bill.
So we register our concern, our probable disapproval on 3C, I guess is the gist of it.
We don't like it.
Okay, so let's move on. Anything else in 115? Actually, I think we'd already that we went back to that. So, 130 rezones we talked about. That one we were okay with. 140 amendments to the comp plan. Anything there? That wasn't particularly.
That's the start of the several changes that are pretty much identical or intended to get us to pretty identical language on how the council votes and has
right,
a resolution.
Right. Everybody's okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's all basically following 145, 150, and blah, blah. Anything else?
Is now the time?
I'm listening.
LT, talk to us about zero lot or setbacks and the zero lot line.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go back. You're talking, what's the page and chapter?
Go to page 20.
Probably two.
Should never have unstapled these things.
20.10.020. So.
And currently, if I'm correct, we do not have zero lot lines. We have 5 feet on each side of the building to a total of 15 feet in multiple families. Is that right?
Right, from the building edges. Mm-hmm. So if you have a four-unit building, that entire building is subject to that rule, not each unit.
I am not in favor of having zero lot lines for the following reasons, and whether other people agree with me or not, I guess that's fine. But if you have zero lot lines and you don't have that five-foot space between your buildings, at least now our fire department can get a hose, a fire hose in and around the buildings. If these buildings are put like this, zero lot line, and then zero lot lines these ways, there will be less area for people to get out. If there is a fire, less ways to escape a building.
Well, let me explain how this would work. Because right now you can have any number of units in a building,
right?
Condominium, apartment, whatever they are, on a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That building has a setback on one side, setback on the other side, front and back. So the same issue, the fire department can't get between those units because right. their walls are common. You have to go around or go through the entries. What this would allow is one style of development is townhouse. So you have, you know, ground floor entry to a series of units in a multifamily zone that share a wall all the way across.
Right.
For the end units. And what this would allow to do is just draw a property line down through the middle of that wall. For fire protection, once you have residences up against each other, they have to go to a higher standard of construction for that very purpose, so that it has to be like a two-hour firewall. So the fire protection is handled that way. This, if you were to look at this provision in effect on the ground, you wouldn't necessarily see a difference between a zero lot line development for townhouse configuration and a townhouse style building on one larger lot, because you don't see the property lines. You just see the resulting building.
Okay.
So on the ends, in the front and back, where they're not attached, they still have that setback requirement, the standard setbacks that apply.
Okay. So now, also, this will be approved through subdivision and not through a PUD.
Yeah, right now, whenever we get these, they're done through PUD.
Which?
And we have, I don't know how many we have, but they're around. But that's the only way you can get there at present.
Could this be used to increase density? It could, you know.
I don't see how.
Okay.
Which a PUD often gets you to. because the PUD process can allow an increase in density.
You okay with that, Elsie?
Yeah.
You understand that? Yeah.
Yeah.
You still have a front yard setback. Right. You still have side yard setbacks when
well,
you.
Right.
Okay.
It's well, just. One thing, we had a project.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. I got it.
Okay. All right. Any other concerns that haven't been expressed? Questions? Okay. No? That, you've got our input on it.
I do. Thank you.
No guarantees. And let's all, as far as that home occupation, everybody see if you can make a point of looking and talking to people that are on one side or the other of that issue and get that. I see that as being probably the most problematic of all the changes in here.
I'll check with my wife and see what she thinks.
So, that ends the discussion on the public hearing of the miscellaneous zoning code amendments. Do we have any new business to be discussed? Do we have any administrative reports and community council discussion that hasn't already been discussed?
Well, with Dave's resignation, when are we going to advertise for new?
I will contact Kathy Anderson tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And I was hoping that I could maybe see if Dave would reconsider, at least delaying, but he's pretty adamant, so we will. I'll talk to Kathy in the morning and I'll let you guys know whatever she says.
Okay.
I presume that we'll have to go through the same notice process.
Listen, there are a lot of good candidates coming through, so I'm...
Well, we had so many good candidates last time that hopefully...
Yeah, we did.
Okay. Well, with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.
You didn't give me a chance to say nay. I just want to stay longer.
Yeah, yes.
You know what? I can't carry this on my scooter.
I thought you were going to take Kathleen's for her.